Hey everyone, welcome to a very special bonus episode of Podcasters Assemble. I'm Eric Slater from Epic Fails of History and Too Young for This Trek. I'm joined today by my good friend Corey.
Hey guys.
And we're here talking with Travis Bove, the Real Comic Heroes podcast and Watchmen Minute about the Bond comics. How are you doing, Travis?
Doing well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, definitely. This is exciting. I'm actually a fan of both of your podcasts, so it's really cool to be able to talk to you about this.
Well, I appreciate it. Definitely. It's good to be here.
We recently checked out a few different Bond comics from Dynamite and thought it'd be interesting to have a discussion about them. We have, let's see, the Live and Let Die adaptation, Kill Chain, and The Body.
So my background with the Bond comics mostly comes from the Bond movies. Of course, I enjoy those. I've really enjoyed the more modern ones. I only got into comic books maybe 4 years ago.
That's right.
And when I saw that there was a Bond comic coming out at your shop, Eric, I was like, oh, you know, I feel like, a lot of the older movies are kind of lame. But I felt like comics would be a solid medium for telling the Bond stories. Stories that we've heard, stories that we haven't heard, because they usually don't have enough time for filler content to make it bad. Mm-hmm. So I've been following the Bond comics since whichever ones came out about 4 or 5 years ago.
I think it started with the Warren Ellis series, right?
Yeah.
Varger?
Varger, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't know how to pronounce it.
Yeah, it's either Varger or like Vargir.
Yeah.
It's like Norse for wolf or something like that. So who knows?
Well, then I feel bad because it definitely looks Nordic and I speak some.
That's awesome. Yeah. So I was working at a comic book shop when this came out, when the first series came out. And yeah, I've been pretty much following it ever since. I think they've done a really interesting job with a lot of these, you know.
For sure.
Hey, how about you, Travis?
Not much history with the Bond comic books. I've read comics, since I was a kid, and I've got a lot more experience with the Bond movies. We cover or are covering all of the Bond franchise over on Real Comic Heroes, and we've gone, in release order. So we've gone, started with the beginning, of course, and I've got some more history with the Bond movies outside of just talking about them on the podcast, but as far as comics goes with Bond, like I think I own the first issue of Varger, mm-hmm. and I read it, and I think it just didn't click with me. At the time, I think Bond in comic book form just didn't grab me.
That initial issue really shocked a lot of people, because it was pretty violent, like right off the bat. I think what they were going for was kind of trying to emulate the feel of the original books, really digging into that, like, spycraft, keeping it down to earth.
Yeah, in mentioning the, thinking it was a good transference for the medium, one of the things we haven't seen much of in the current Bond films that we're watching on mm-hmm. your other podcast is a cold killer. He's witty, he's fun, he's enjoyable, but there aren't a ton of moments that you can just pull out where it's like, oh, he's a cold-hearted killer. And I feel like in the comic books,
they lean into that.
Does show. Yeah.
One of the things I did like about the way they were handling the modern Bond comics was they were approaching it differently from the Daniel Craig movies. Now, I love the Daniel Craig movies, but if they tried to emulate that or tried to, like, it just wouldn't have the same impact, I think. It was good that it stood on its own.
Yeah. I like that things felt familiar, mm-hmm. but nothing felt... nothing really felt like it was trying to be in the continuity of the movies. And that's good
Which
because...
Which is difficult, too.
I'm sure it is, but it's good that they're not then stuck with... Because the movie continuities change and the actors change and, so why tie it to one thing? Yeah, yeah. It's kind of something I wish the Marvel the more recent Marvel comics would stop doing is, mm-hmm. you know, when the MCU got so big, it seemed like everything in the comics started to look like the MCU.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, everyone, like, outfits or, you know, Hawkeye became a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent or, you know, Agent yeah. Coulson is running around in the MCU. Like, it's good, but the movies may not be around forever, and your comic book continuity, in theory, is going to go on, you know, forever. So why tie it to one thing that may change? So...
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you've got the same face, and I'm pretty sure all of them, Bond looks the same, so you have this singular identifiable character.
Well, I was noticing when I was reading these recently, because I had to reread them to kind of mm-hmm. refresh my memory, and the way Bond is drawn in a lot of these, he looks a lot like Bruce Wayne to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're, I thought that too. Or the Punisher.
Yeah.
In a couple issues of the body.
Oh, yeah, definitely the body.
You know, but I'm sure we'll touch on all that stuff.
Oh, yeah. And what I like about the design of him is if you read the original Casino Royale book, that's mm-hmm. kind of how Bond was described. Mm-hmm. Like, there wasn't a whole lot of description, but, like, it fits, you know, and he has, like, a little scar on his cheek, which you don't really get in any of the movies.
I didn't even get that in this book either, in Live and Let Die. They mention the scar a few times.
They don't, they don't put a lot of focus on it because it is mentioned, but it is much more visible in the other two.
Yeah. I always like the way that Ian Fleming described Bond, mm-hmm. and it was, he based the idea or his, who he would cast was an actor named Hoagie Carmichael.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then he would describe Bond as having, like, a long face and a cruel mouth. And I always really liked that idea. And, you know, they certainly, with the movies, they certainly, you know, cast more leading man and
definitely. Yeah, you know. Roguish type.
It's like, as I was, reading it, I think I know exactly who I would cast now for Bond. It would be Justin Theroux. He was.
That sounds really familiar. trying to place the face.
He was he's the main guy in the HBO series The Leftovers. He was the card playing guy in The Last Jedi, who they were. Rose and Finn were supposed to find that guy at the casino.
The guy that should have been Lando.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So he's been in a few things, but he's that kind of guy that has a slender face and not, you know, Brad Pitt, you know, handsome, but like
I could kind of see that.
So it's funny you mentioned that. Do you he was in a movie apparently called The Spy Who Dumped Me.
Yeah.
So he's already been Bond.
Yeah.
That's on my wish list. So yeah, let's dive in.
I have the most notes on Live and Let Die.
Yeah, that's where I started.
Same.
Okay.
Now, this was an adaptation of the original Live and Let Die book, which, if you read this, it's almost nothing like the movie.
Oh, not at all.
Which is interesting. I didn't expect that. So recently, when we started doing the Bond movies on Podcasters Assemble, I was like, you know what? I want to try to get back into the Bond books and kind of try to read them in order. This is the second book, and it was really hard to get through the actual book. I don't know if either of you have read the original version.
I think not of Casino. This. I haven't read Live and Let Die. I think Casino Royale is the only book that I've read. It was that or From Russia with Love, but also kind of boring.
I've read.
You have to be in the right headspace for it.
Yeah.
I've probably read a third of Casino Royale. It's you know, just one I haven't finished yet.
There's not a lot of action to it. you really have to kind of like dedicate it.
Getting through it. Yeah, like Ian Fleming essentially wrote about what he imagined while working at a desk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he was, no disrespect, but he was a desk jockey.
Right.
Go ahead.
Well, so yeah, the first book was pretty good. I mean, it's good because it kind of established everything else. Like, it's iconic.
Mm-hmm.
There's some issues, you know, with it, as there are with a lot of the early movies as well, with the misogyny and whatnot. The second book was rough to get through, and not because the story was bad, not because the writing was bad, but there was a lot of overtly racist commentary throughout it.
Sure.
But real quick note, the third book's actually really good.
Oh, okay.
The third book is Moonraker, which is also nothing like the movie. And it's pretty interesting. Like, that really hasn't been adapted to this day. But yeah, so back to Live and Let Die. When it came to the comic, I actually really enjoyed this version of the story. There's still some stuff in there because it is period. It takes place in the 50s when the book came out. But they managed to eliminate a lot of the really problematic material from the actual book, and I was actually able to enjoy it for what it was.
Okay.
What are your first impressions?
For me, jumping into it, I obviously was familiar with the title, and I know the movie well enough. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't sure if this was going to be... I didn't know it was an adaptation of the original book. I thought it might be, you know, more of a version of the movie, even. Mm-hmm. I wasn't exactly sure what this was going to be. So it being a period piece, you know, kind of set in the 50s or... Is it set in the 50s or
I'm pretty
60s?
Sure,
or,
I'm
wasn't
pretty sure.
Sure
it's the 50s, yeah.
Okay. Because
a lot of the books were written in the 50s.
Yeah, that's true. So that was something to not get used to, but just a little bit of a surprise for me. And it was interesting reading, I guess, experiencing a Bond story that wasn't being adapted by like the filmmakers 10 or so years later, like the case with Dr. No or From Russia with Love, but to have a story that's being adapted as it was written, you know, by Fleming. And at first I didn't know if Bond worked, if Fleming's material worked in like present day. Like, I don't think you could take this story and update it, you know.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking about that. Like, is there a way to adapt this in a modern context? I mean, you would have to take a lot of liberties, you know, like change out a lot of details. But I think there is a nugget of a really good story in there for sure. Like, some of the action's great. You know, we'll get into that.
Yeah.
What are your initial thoughts, Corey?
So initial thoughts, having very recently watched the film, it was interesting to see how many differences there were between the two. Mm-hmm. Like, there is no Rosie. Like, Teehee and Whisper have even smaller roles.
One scene.
But I like that in this one, Mr. Big is not, you know, some fake island guy and some New Orleans guy.
Right.
He is just himself.
Mm-hmm.
But he is living off of the voodoo name, the Baron Samedi.
That was interesting.
That's a physical character in the film, but it's just a name in here. And I do like the very kind of brief mention that, how did they phrase it? It's that he is dead, but has repossessed himself. I think is sort of how they phrased it, so that he died and repossessed his own body, and is the Baron Samedi. But it was enjoyable. I felt like it holds up in many ways a lot better than the film does, especially getting rid of so many characters. And I think I really liked, I felt like Mr. Big was someone to be afraid of, because he had eyes all over the southeastern U.S. He didn't exist only in port and only in New Orleans.
Right.
You know, he literally had eyes, you know, even throughout Florida. So, like, this guy could do whatever he wanted.
Yeah. What's cool about the way they betrayed him is he was a mastermind, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You felt like he was in control of the situation and Bond was in trouble, you know. That scene in, where was it, like underneath the club, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
That was intense.
Yeah,
for sure.
And another thing I like about this adaptation, especially going in with the movies being my background and everything, and then jumping right into this story like you guys, what's interesting is this is like a really early Bond story, so a lot of the tropes haven't quite developed.
Mm-hmm.
And the way Bond's character is a little bit different, like, he's not quite as refined.
Mm-hmm.
And you see a little bit of vulnerability, which I thought was really cool. Like, there's that scene on the plane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, oh wow, why haven't they? I don't know. Maybe it's the inner monologue that they put in there.
There's a quote from that that I really loved. As it's towards the end of that plane scene. There's so for the listeners, if you haven't read this, there's a storm happening. Bond is on a plane.
Yep.
They're visually showing that all of the passengers are just freaking the F out. and Bond has already been through a lot at this point. And there's a line towards the end that says, "Your stars have already let you come quite a long way since you left your mother's womb and whimpered at the cold air of the world. Perhaps they'll even let you get to Jamaica tonight." And that's when Bond lights up his cigarette.
I thought that was like a profound line. And that's the thing, like Ian Fleming's writing has moments like that where it's like, wow, it's really good stuff. So it's like, you know, kind of hard to you know what I mean, like it's hard to throw it all out. It's like you know,
yeah,
it
I mean
it, inter-
no go ahead Travis.
It was interesting that this isn't the Bond that this isn't the suave and super spy Bond that we're used to. And yeah, by the time it's, you know, he's kind of on the run when he's got Solitaire to worry about, like he shows genuine fear and concern for her, trying to get her to safety.
Definitely.
And yeah, he's kind of just run ragged, and it was interesting to have a Bond that kind of got sloppy when he gets scared, and you know, he's not the super spy that we're used to. And I will say the going nice to that to the plane crash, or not crash, the the plane,
yeah, no, the plane
kind of sequence.
Safely.
Yeah, spoilers.
spoilers.
I will say, like, I could tell where it was going, you know, because it's spread out over several panels, and you know, this very nice voiceover or commentary is running, and then because you're seeing all the other terrified passengers, and then we see Bond and he's very calm, and it's like, I kind of knew that's what they were going to do. It's almost a cliche at this point, I think, of showing everyone terrified and he's the one who's calm and collected, which is how he should be.
But
for some reason that sequence just felt, you know, overdone for me, but
I understand that.
He had up until this point he'd already been through a lot, and like at this point Solitaire has already been taken away. He's already been got like mentally run through the ringer, because Felix is just Felix has been done in at this point. So he has definitely just like lost it. His countenance is gone. What this reminds me of, and I think the best modern example that anyone can view, is this is the Casino Royale Craig going into the Quantum of Solace, like beginning of Quantum of Solace, that like he's doesn't know what he's doing, and then suddenly he loses everything, and then he's like, you know what, screw it, like
that's good.
If I die, I die, you know, because they've already tried to kill me multiple times.
I thought the art style was pretty great as well. One of the things I really liked about the way they did it was there would be moments where you kind of see things from Bond's point of view, where he's kind of analyzing a room, and you kind of see like, okay, this is the suitcase, you know.
Yeah.
Like it kind of, there's like a blueprint of like everything in the room.
A fun little touch.
Yeah.
I'm looking at a panel where he's got his clothes and stuff, and it lists everything: two single breasted suits in dark blue light weight worsted, and let's see, display kerchief, Stark socks. Like he just lists everything, and it's very, you can tell his brain is very systematic. And then a couple pages later, and there's a bomb inside this package, and it says bomb on a timer. Dynamite ? Plastique ? Shrapnel ? And you can tell that's how his brain is like determining what is in this package. And I do like that throughout the book.
I love those moments. And I almost wonder if when they inevitably reboot Bond again, if anyone would ever, like, do you think this would be possible to convey in a movie? I was thinking, like, you know, the recent Sherlock Holmes movies with Robert Downey Jr. There, we'd have those moments where he's like analyzing the situation. I feel like that can maybe work for Bond and kind of differentiate it from some of the previous versions.
Yeah,
I think the only shortcoming of that is that we not only have the Benedict Cumberbatch series, Sherlock mm-hmm. series that that's does true. That, that's but true. Also the Downey Jr. films that do that. And it's cool and I love it, but
maybe too much of a trope at this point.
Yeah, it's one of those, like, it sucks that somebody else did it. I'd still, you know, I'd be interested in seeing if they couldn't find a new way to do that.
Right.
Oh, definitely. I was, you know, what it brought to mind was there's a couple scenes in Fight Club where he's just walking through a room and you kind of see things labeled.
The yeah. IKEA furniture yeah, scene. Yeah.
Yes, that's the scene. Yeah. Yep. So, I don't know.
Or if, like, seeing a guy's suit jacket and it, like, has a call out of, like, that little lump looks mm-hmm. like the holster holding this specific type of gun. You see, like, mm-hmm. a little flash of something like that because it's his training teaches yep. him to identify things like that. That'd be fun.
I totally agree. Another cool thing with that is it was sort of a way to kind of sum up stuff from the book, because one of the things that I'm not a huge fan of with Ian Fleming's writing is that he'll go into way too much detail about something. Yeah, and it's yeah. cool that they took, like, something that might be 5 pages and summed it up in one panel. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was a nice little shortcut too. What'd you guys think of the ending?
I really liked the ending. It was weird because reading it, it occurred to me or dawned on me that throughout, like, you realize, okay, a lot of the movie A License to Kill with Dalton is taken from this book, especially what yep. happens to Felix, and the, like, Mr. Big is kind of also Robert Davi's character from License to Kill.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
They've kind of merged those two, the business at the wharf and the bait business and all that stuff is adapted and used in License to Kill. So that was a pleasant surprise because I really like License to Kill.
Same.
So finding out, I guess, that it came from Live and Let Die was a nice surprise. And then even the ending when they've got Bond and Solitaire tied, you know, they're dragging behind the boat.
The boat scene, yeah.
Yeah, they use that in Thunderball. So I'm guessing this is where it comes from as well. So there's...
That's right, yeah.
I really like the ending of this book.
Well, it was, as far as, like, villain death traps go, that's a good one. Like, it's mm-hmm. so simple and realistic, and it's kind of terrifying.
Like, yeah, it's like a good backup of getting rid of the bodies.
Yep.
You know, but also, it's the, I'm going to be a dick about this, but also there really is no way out of this, because even if you escape, you know, if Bond were to escape by any means... He's still screwed. Like, there's still, you know, chum and sharks all around them.
Yep. And I love how in his inner monologue or whatever, he's counting down the seconds.
Yeah.
Because there's that bomb and he knows, like, if it goes off too late or if it goes off too early, like, they're fucked, you know?
And one of the things, because Bond hasn't seemed quite as cold in this particular issue, but... he's thinking to himself, well, no, he talked to Solitaire when they were chained up in the room together. The plan was, if things did not work, when Bond and Solitaire are speaking in the room, they apparently came to an agreement that he would drown her.
Yeah.
If things did not go the way... And I was just like, man, that is, you know, it's new intense, spy. Man. That's all you've got.
Yeah. Like, that's when you know it's a desperate situation.
Yeah.
I thought it worked. I thought that worked.
Yeah, it was good. When it actually ended peacefully, that was my final note, was actually ends peacefully. Because I was expecting something like Casino Royale, where, like, he's happy, and then at the very end she just gets murked or something.
It did have that same feeling with him kind of recuperating... And she's there with him because that's the way Casino Royale kind of ends, and then it's it's not quite done at that point. Yeah. And
yeah, exactly.
Being that this is based on a book, I feel like there were a lot of things we see in other Bond films. Of the other notes I took, Mr. Big reminds me a lot of Goldfinger.
I could see that, he's got the whole pirate gold backstory, right?
Yeah, and he's not about world domination. He just wants to make money off of, like his findings.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's funny reading Mr. Big. Like, I couldn't help but imagine Michael Clark Duncan from Daredevil.
Yeah.
From his Kingpin performance in Daredevil, and then, definitely. But for some reason, I read his voice in with Telly Savalas' voice from Honor Majesty's Secret Service. I don't know why, I put that voice
because I tend to do that.
I do that when I read comics. I always like assign a voice like in my head to characters.
So Telly Savalas has an amazing voice. I could totally see that being That's awesome.
Yeah, and in that, it makes me think that maybe Julius Harris, who played Teehee in the movie, should have been playing Mr. Big.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was the, 7 foot tall, massive, very threatening looking dude.
Yeah, the guy that played Kananga in the movie, he was all right, but Teehee's where it was at. Like, him and Baron Samedi were both, really captivating characters.
Yeah,
and they didn't get the service that they, needed.
Yeah, even the guy who played the Baron would have been a better choice.
Yeah.
But I feel like the films fell into this, the villain can't be...
the manic one, or I don't know.
Well, they can't be imposing.
Oh, I see.
You know, you're supposed to be afraid of their mind, not their body.
Right,
and Mr. Big was both. I mean, he was Kingpin.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. But yeah, so after reading this one, I kind of feel like they need to keep going and adapt all the books at this point, because
I would enjoy that. I think that'd be a good idea.
And it's a way to kind of update them a little bit. They're still, period pieces, but they're able to kind of edit out some of the material that is really hard to get through from a modern perspective.
Yeah.
I feel like any Bond is kind of neat because as technology expands, you can just sort of exchange things. But I feel like Bond is the core story and the character. And any one of these could be very easily updated.
Definitely.
When you just look at the Daniel Craig movies, I mean, these are old books, and I think they did a very solid job of how do you take a technology that doesn't exist and just shove it into the same story and make it fit? And they've got Walter PPKs that read your palm print. And it's there's more worries about hacking and stuff, which is no different than uncovering radio frequencies or tapping phone lines.
That's true.
So, I feel like the spy genre lends itself very well to technological advances.
Yeah, in a way, I think, Bond's more relevant than he's been in a while,
sure.
All the surveillance stuff and everything going on today. And the rise of fascism. Which we're about to get into with Kill Chain. Any final thoughts on Live and Let Die?
My only, final thought, I guess, would be... I think about halfway through, the art style really takes a dip in quality.
Yeah.
Throughout the book, I think they do a good job with details and the rooms and the settings are very detailed and they put a lot of effort into that. But then the characters kind of just look sloppy, and especially the underwater training kind of montage where he's swimming with Coral. And there's these barracuda that... I can't tell if they say that they're like a 10-pound barracuda, but it looks like it's as big or if not bigger than Bond and Coral themselves. So
some perspective issues there.
It's really weird. So about halfway through the book, towards the end, art style really started to dip for me,
Do you think they were kind of in a rush towards the end? Because I know that happens sometimes with...
But then there's some pages, the stuff with him underwater, going to...
oh, that's right.
Mr. Big's island is really good. The octopus and some of that stuff. So it was inconsistent, but...
It feels like the artist was really excited to do the underwater stuff. That whole sequence was awesome.
Yeah.
Just the art style, it felt kind of weird, and I don't know what it added to the story, but it was cool looking.
Final thoughts. It was enjoyable. I do agree, because I think most of my grievances did come towards the end as far as, you know, even character facial quality dropping. Up until the boat blowing up, because I feel like that was very detailed. But perspective was off, and there's one tiny thing that I noticed in several scenes. They would show like abyssal creatures, things you would never see in the islands and you would never see at those shallow depths. But after looking at it a couple of times, I think what the artist was trying to do was like show this is what they're afraid of, is the unknown. It's not saying that these are things that exist in those waters, but because we know they exist somewhere and in water, that, you know, Bond is thinking about this and he's like freaking himself out. So
yeah,
kudos to some of the things they don't talk about, but do show.
I totally forgot to mention, I actually thought the way they handled all the stuff Quirrell was pretty good.
You know,
I thought that was
Kind of
cool. I kept waiting for him to get killed.
It's kind of funny, they kill him off in Dr. No in the movie, at least. And so when they got to Live and Let Die, they're like, oh wait, we killed that character off, we'll just name him Quirrell Jr.
All
right. Good, easy way to retcon. Slap Jr. on the end.
Exactly. Yeah, it's so weird because all the Bond movies, the ones that are based on the books, are all out of order. Like, it doesn't always add up. So up next we have Kill Chain.
Yeah, let's kill it.
When I first heard about the series, it was kind of advertised, I think, in previews, as being Bond versus neo-Nazis. And that is sort of in the story, but it turns out that's just one part of it. Like, it kind of goes well beyond that, which I thought was interesting. And it's sort of subtle about the way it does that, at least in this story.
So yeah, he's, what is it? An agent is killed. There's actually a lot going on in the beginning of this.
There
but
really
the whole
is.
Leading into the German thing is apparently their MI6 agent in training, who's set to be a 00, actually double crosses MI6 and is selling dirty MI6 secrets to a CIA agent who is sniped by a guy who appears to be German, because he does the salute before committing suicide. And shortly thereafter, Bond learns that one of their insurgent agents in like this German or neo-Nazi military was killed and has SS carved into him. And then later we learned that that was actually their, I don't remember the Russian phrase, but not the German.
That was an interesting, that was a really interesting twist, because that kind of connected back to the books a little bit.
Yeah.
That was Smersh, right?
That goes back to From Russia with Love, I think. I think they even say it there.
So that was kind of an unexpected twist, because you think the story's one thing and it's like, whoa, no, it's not.
Because it does lean, I mean, it leans all the way towards it until you learn what the actual deal was.
In a way, I kind of like that twist a lot, though, because it feels very relevant just to what's going on today. It seems like, you know, there's a lot of misinformation out there. A lot of it might be coming from Russia, for all we know. And it seems like they are trying to stoke the fires of certain extremist groups.
Yeah.
And that's what this felt like. I was like, oh, my God, this is too real. And this was written a few years ago, right? Like, this...
I think it was 18, 17, 18.
Yeah, like 18? Two or three years ago. It's very recent.
Pretty recent. But it seems more relevant now than even then.
I liked Bond going to this, skinhead bar.
Yes,
and
that
running
seems
into,
great.
This is where he runs into Felix, right?
Who's been pretending to be a German.
I think he's got blonde hair and blue eyes, right?
And so then go ahead.
It's cool when you know, once it's revealed to be Felix and they're kind of hanging out, you know, they don't make a big deal about it, but Felix has this cybernetic or this prosthetic arm, and, you know, even though this isn't following up the book we just read, it's like, okay, in the lore of Bond, it's still in canon that he lost some limbs to this shark attack that happens in Live and Let Die. And yeah. I like that it, you know, is carried over here. So
I did too. That moment in the book in Live and Let Die was pretty shocking. I was like, wait, this is like really early on and they're already killing off Felix.
Right.
So it was cool that they incorporate Felix into these comics, but they do acknowledge like that
there
story
is some
element.
some history there. Yeah.
Yeah. So as a touch on that, I swear that has something to do with Varger. Because in that they had like technology to help. I want to say it was kind of the classic thing of, when a soldier loses a limb, they can get this awesome prosthetic.
Extremis and Iron Man 3, I think it was.
That's something that has happened because in the Felix Leiter comic, he has that arm. So this is something that has, I don't remember if he's always had it in the comics or if they had some other excuse because the comics only rebooted like 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. But again, either way, like whether he showed up like that or they had to write it like that, it's still a solid homage to the book. Like ensuring he loses that arm.
I like my Felix to have one arm. Yeah. So hopefully Jeffrey Wright doesn't lose any limbs in the next movie.
Right, right.
No, Kill Chain as a whole, I think my only real problem is that it's a 6-issue comic, and in tradition of 6-issue comics, the final issue kind of feels rushed.
Mm. It does. I totally agree. That's, I think, one of the strikes against it for me.
Yeah, because I was really digging the story and like we're really getting into stuff and then it comes to a head and pops in the same issue. And I feel like maybe even one more issue could have saved it.
It feels like it kind of leaves on a cliffhanger, right?
Well, in this one, yes, because whoever was in the very first issue, they're having some type of like existential conversation.
Yeah.
Is also like the final 2 or 3 pages. So.
Oh, yeah. The old guy in the Russian tundra or whatever.
As far as I know, they haven't followed the storyline up yet. Mm. I could be wrong.
I don't think so because
I'm a little out of the loop on past. You know,
they've had like James Bond Origins, Moneypenny, and then 2 other series with no particular names.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they'll do this again someday, but it looks like they're running in another direction.
Mm. Yeah.
I really like the kind of sequence with the semi that's loaded full of drones, and they send those drones out to attack a couple people. I guess I think the head of the CIA, M, gets attacked too. It's like a NATO facility.
NATO,
here we go. Yeah, NATO HQ in Brussels.
Yeah, no, that was a great moment.
That's why I think like the modernization of spy stuff can just be done.
Mm-hmm.
Because instead of, I don't know, a helicopter or so, you know, like a news helicopter coming by and like loading them up with lead, they've got drones. And then, of course, the payoff from the first issue, she tricks Bond into, Bond thinks he's getting the one up on her, but she's actually getting the one up on him by getting his thumbprint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then using that thumbprint, fingerprints rather, all over the truck.
Yeah.
And it was a self-driving truck too, so a Tesla truck.
Yeah.
Used for global domination.
For real. It seems like a lot of the cheesy gadgets from a lot of the old movies could kind of work now if they just update them a little bit.
And
I think this storyline actually does a really interesting thing with that. There's that whole Q scene, I think it's an issue too, where Bond's given like this high-tech cell phone with a password-triggered self-destruct.
Yeah.
And the way they described it, the way it worked, it was like, oh, that's like a real thing, isn't it?
I mean, they've got a battery. Anything with a battery can be rigged to explode.
Like that lithium. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's happened accidentally,
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had issues with that. What was it? I think Samsung? A few years back.
Yeah, I don't even remember which model. I think it was like the S7. It disappeared very quickly.
Luckily, yeah. Yeah. Thankfully. Pretty scary stuff, though.
No, there was, I think it was XKCD. There was a webcomic that, someone wanted to take the nail clippers off of a guy going through, TSA. And he's like, he goes through this elaborate explanation of how he can turn his laptop battery into a bomb.
No!
To the guy at TSA.
What?
He's like, this is like, these laptops and cell phones are far more dangerous than the stuff that you're taking off of people.
I mean, true. But there's a time and place.
It was a webcomic, but like ever since it's like, man, that's,
it's so true,
and seeing that sequence in this, it's like, yeah, literally, I mean, it's, it's just something waiting to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But yeah, I like how this story kind of blends this cool spy aesthetic with like moments of shocking, brutal violence. Mm-hmm. It balances those well. And it's weird how it kind of flows, it works.
And it has some Bond like touches that felt familiar and felt right. Like,
yes.
Him becoming a rogue agent, with the framing him for the drone attack, and then
which
him
happens
having
in
to,
like the last five movies.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Having him he convinces Felix kind of what's going on, and he has to, Felix gives him his gun, says make it look good, and he knocks him out. And it's like that feels right,
That was great.
And then the thing, one thing I didn't like is. Issue 5, they eventually get Bond because he trusts the wrong people. They get him handcuffed to this table, and his only way out, they're about to kill him. Like, he literally rips the table out of its, like, the bolts off the floor, and that doesn't feel like a James Bond escape move. Like, super strength is not generally his go-to move of getting out of a situation. So
that's a good point.
Typically it's like there's a stroke of luck. Like, maybe there's some absent-minded goon who's fiddling with James Bond's phone, and then suddenly it blows up and causes a distraction, or I don't know, but
I totally agree.
That just didn't feel right. Like, that felt like I'm not, well, I should say it feels okay in a James Bond comic book.
Yeah.
But not something that, and I guess I approach this thinking of it in terms of it being a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And,
same.
So when I get to stuff like that, it's like, okay, I can't imagine buying that in a James Bond movie, but it's okay for a comic. And that's, they can do certain things differently, and that's fine. But
it does feel out of place because they go out of their way to make it really realistic for the most part. So it's very grounded, and then all of a sudden,
And they kind of show you that, I don't know what it is that they're trying to show you, but it's like they do a close-up of the nuts and bolts, and you're like, yeah, that looks really secure, and then he just removes it. But that's what Eric and I were talking about. Like, that's kind of a classic thing in comics. That sixth issue, if you have not properly resolved your story, you just kind of bullshit your way through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Could have been again, a deadline thing.
Yeah, that's why, like, I wish, if they had done just that seventh issue, maybe we would have not have gotten this, like, superhuman feat of strength.
Yeah.
That should have been a cliffhanger. I don't know. I think you're totally right. I hadn't really thought about that too much, honestly, but I think that's a really good point. There's a lot of ways they could have handled that. One of the things I like about, like, the Sean Connery Bond movies is that he really lucks out a whole lot. Like in Goldfinger,
he's a pretty bad spy.
He's terrible.
Constantly getting his ass handed to him, and it's like, why is this guy still alive?
Mm-hmm.
But like, he never gives up, and that's kind of the thing. Like, you kind of root for. Like, he's always willing to kind of throw himself into it. But yeah.
I like the last issue with the Bond gets on board this big plane that they're trying to use to, if I remember right, they're trying to upload a file into this I think it's called an AWAC, the plane with the big satellite on it.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to upload something to it so that it crashes, basically the Western Europe or something, I think, to destabilize and all that.
Yeah, destabilize just the West.
Yeah, yeah.
Like NATO, like the U.S., all that, you know, it's all connected, I guess.
But it's a good action issue with Bond kind of sabotaging that whole plan. And
I thought it was a good villain plot.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I didn't understand all of it, like the specifics.
By the end of it, it's kind of like
there was some cool hacker lingo going on.
Yeah.
That went over my head.
And at a certain point, it's like, so what does this have to do with Nazis in a bar in issue two? Like, you know,
right.
some stuff like that. That's like, how did we get here? But
yeah, definitely. I had to reread it. But I think overall I liked it. I feel like with a few changes, this could make for a good Bond movie. One of the things I do like is the title, I think, has double meaning a little bit. And a lot of good Bond titles do, you know. Kill Chain, if I'm not mistaken, is a term with, like, cybersecurity.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken, I could be totally wrong.
Not
But there's also, obviously, the, you know, like, not like a literal chain of killing, but you know what
I mean?
Well,
they used it at a certain point when, I think, when the CIA guy gets killed... And Bond says, like, it's a kill chain, and you're on it, like, talking to M. Like, he's the next one
in like
the chain.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's what I meant, yeah.
Yeah, there is an actual literal chain of kills that, you know, they have planned.
Yeah, no, totally.
Yeah. I guess my end hot take on this, I do like that Bond was kind of a cold, hard killer.
Mm-hmm.
Because even the... Was it the art director? Oh, he goes back to talk to someone and, like, they spill the beans almost immediately. And he's like, dope, brah, right in the head.
Oh, yeah.
And walks out. And that is not the first time he does that. Like, for each instance. Well, even with literally starting the book off with the chick. I can't remember her name now.
Rika,
yeah. So, I mean, he shoots her, like, point blank in the chest, not thinking that she's, you know, wearing protection. But, yeah, it's... This is a little bit more of that, like, at the end of Quantum of Solace Bond.
Yeah.
Where it's no longer rage killing. He's just like, look, this is my job. I kill.
That's true. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. Like, in a lot of the older Bond movies, they don't really show that side of it, you know? Like,
yeah.
But if you think about it, like, he would have to be. Like, that's his job.
Yeah.
His job is murder.
Yeah.
I mean, it's killing bad people, but it's still like, ooh, you know? Like, not everyone
even
can do that. And he would have to be a little bit of a sociopath, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, in, not to jump too far ahead, but in the very next issue, or the very next series we're talking about, the body, on the list of things the doctor recommends at the very end is a full mental exam. That it's the norm, and they make it sound like that is the normal thing to do. And honestly, after all these missions where you go out, you almost die by God knows what means,
right?
And kill people by whatever means you can finagle. You probably... You go to the doctor, you get checked out, you go to the psychiatrist and get checked out again.
Yeah, I mean, I can't even imagine how taxing that would be. Like, if you really consider, like, what that line of work would be like, it's... I'd be stressed out constantly. Like,
yeah.
And just living in, like, perpetual fear, but I guess, like, maybe you become numb to it, or, like, you have to be able to disassociate. And, yeah, I guess we'll get into that a little bit more in this next series. any final thoughts, Travis?
Kind of what you guys already touched on, like, this would make a decent Bond movie if adapted for screen. I think it would need to be filled out with some Bond tropes, you know. Totally. There'd be a sequence with that Chantal woman that he meets at the art gallery or auction house, you know. They would have a romantic element, and then but then
unless Felix is the Bond girl.
I'd be all right with that.
Just kidding. It
ends on a strange note. We kind of talked about how it's bookended with this old guy in this Russian tundra who, like we said, it has elements of neo-Nazis, but then they even make a point to talk about, well, we're going to distract them with SS and make everyone think that it's Nazis, but it's really Russia. and here we are in Russia, but then it ends with these, this guy getting the Nazi salute. So I don't understand who this guy is. What is he, a Nazi? Is he Russian? You know, they're not the same thing. I'm a little confused by, and maybe, yeah, this is just something that is a loose end that they will pick up in a future story. But as a, if I'm just reading this, it's a little unsatisfying as far as, like, I don't know who the enemy was, you know?
So. Yeah. I mean, it could be that they were planning on eventually leading to Spectre being behind it all, and that's why it's all connected.
Yeah. You
know? The ultimate evil.
Yeah.
But it's hard to say because we haven't, as of yet, got a follow up yet. So.
But it was a really,
that's totally valid,
good and entertaining story. I mean,
I agree. Yeah. High octane action, like everything I wanted out of a Bond
story. It moves
story
fast. There's not a lot of distractions, like I talked about, that would be added in to make it a movie. You know, it moves. Mm-hmm. It moves really quickly. So.
Yeah, I think the thing I like the most about it, though, is that it really touches on a lot of topical mm-hmm. stuff today. And I think some of the best Bond stories do that. Like, they feel of their era. But, you know, I almost feel like they were going for more of the Nazi stuff, but didn't want to fully commit, you know, halfway through. You know, and they was like, it's Russia. Yeah. Yeah. Well, but that, who knows what happened behind the scenes.
Yeah, being like a spy thing, it would be that sort of beautiful bit of confusion where it's mm-hmm. Germans controlling Russians faking out to be Germans.
Like, triple agents.
The double fake. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
But even so, like, maybe this guy is kind of a controller that nobody else knows about. So they don't know that he's German. He's telling one guy to tell other people. So they all think they're part of Smersh or they're Russians. But it's actually the Germans who are... Or this one German specifically.
Well, yeah, not the Germans.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, totally. Yeah, so moving on. What did you guys think of the body? Initial thoughts.
For me, it started strong and then got very confusing and very frustrating. And I think it ended strong. We'll have to, once we go through it, I'll have to remember how I felt about it. But it was sure. unsettling. Like, I didn't understand at the start that this was going to kind of be an anthology with different artists, and yet it is still a single connected story. That didn't really
for sure
work for me.
What'd you think, Corey?
So this one I did not finish because I started it later.
That's right, in the morning.
But and I also, like I mentioned to you through DMing before, the Bond comics, like, I did not realize there were so many more comics, but I do remember that these were some of the hardest comics to get consistently.
Yeah, Diamond. Yeah, that's a whole thing.
Yeah.
I remember I was working at the shop when these were coming out, and I couldn't even get my issues because I had to give them to customers, you know?
It was weird. Sometimes it'd be like, because I'm the worst customer. I usually only buy like once every other month. So I read late, but I think both Kill Chain and The Body, I'm missing issues.
Mm-hmm.
But back when you were there, like, I would get issue 3 and not 1 and 2. And it wasn't your fault. It would, you know, I'd bring it up and someone would be like, yeah, we never actually got issue 1 in or something like that.
I wasn't in charge at the time, so I don't know the full story, but Diamond issue.
Yeah. Anyways, as far as what I did read, I finished the first volume of it and have been perusing through the rest of it. Man, that first issue, that is real good.
Oh, yeah. I love issue 1.
Oh, it is. The art style is phenomenal. The story, I think, is just... It is a very strong issue 1.
And the concepts behind it, too.
Oh, yeah. Like, that
it was very
back
original.
To double faking, someone who's like a very very clearly working for an offending government, like an enemy of England. And then you find out at the very end, she's like, actually, no, I screwed them over too. So,
oh, know, yeah,
I'm
yeah,
here for the
yeah.
people. But then in the very next issue, I feel like the art style, it clearly a oh, different yeah. artist, very big drop
yeah.
in quality.
It's starting this one right after having read Kill Chain, like this felt like the same Bond because he looks like Bruce Wayne / the Punisher. He looks like Frank Castle, Bruce Wayne, if that makes sense. That's kind of what he looked like totally in Kill Chain. So yeah, opening issue one with him, you know, just battered and bruised and everything, but still looking like the same guy, you know, was an easy transition to start with.
Mm-hmm.
But then issue two, it's like he looks like Phil Coulson. Like he looks like kind of, you know, definitely competent, but maybe a little soft around yeah. the edges, not quite as severe of a guy that we're now used to. So that was pretty jarring. Whoever...
Yeah, the art style change was a little jarring, and I imagine it would be if you didn't know going in yeah. this is an anthology. I probably should have warned you.
No, that's okay. I mean, I do think whoever the artist is on this first issue is definitely a fan of the show Party Down. You guys are familiar with okay. it?
I'm actually
It's a really short-lived, maybe Showtime show? About a couple, I think about a, yeah, not catering company, but like mm-hmm. some guys that work events. So the people in the background of this issue who are the waiters and that sort of thing, like there's a lady that snaps at her fingers at Bond who is undercover as a waiter. You know, she is definitely modeled after Kristen Bell's character on that show. And then a couple panels later, a woman with red hair and red rimmed glasses is talking to Bond, and she is definitely Megan Mullally's character. And there's oh, just wow. a few characters, like the waiting staff, that are definitely modeled after some characters in the show Party Down. So that was a fun, just, you know, little aside for me.
Since it is an anthology, we should probably break it down by issue.
That's kind of how I went through it once I realized, like, okay, yeah. that's what we're doing. But
that's the case, then I do know that issues one and two are at least the same mm-hmm. story.
So the issues all end up kind of connecting, especially towards the end. But at first, it kind of feels like it's all one-offs.
Yeah.
Like, there's no connection initially, it feels yeah. like, you know. But it's weird how it kind of ties together. And I have mixed feelings on that. I almost feel like I would have liked it more if it wasn't
right.
connected.
I liked how as I was reading issue one and he's telling all this stuff to this doctor.
His injuries
yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah, and just talking about like pursuing this assassin. And then it started to occur to me, like, what if it's all leading to Bond just suddenly kills the doctor because he knows that the doctor was the assassin? Like, for some reason, it just felt like he's talking to an enemy. So I was yeah. really waiting for
that
a twist,
a cool,
you know, that I built up in my head, of course, but that was still a fun way to read it and just, you know, and again, as far as casting goes, I totally read the doctor with, Kumail Nanjiani's voice.
I could totally see that. I thought he was a cool
yeah,
character
yeah, I did
too. There was some good dialogue there, and I like that Bond is trying to be very coy and he's not giving away any details from the mission, and he even says like there was an explosion in a helicopter
yeah.
and all this stuff, and there clearly yeah. wasn't. Like, it was just very, you know, just a intimate knife stabbing. Like,
I did like
yeah.
the banter was just so strong, as you've mentioned, but I just love how the
it was good writing.
Yeah, dialogue. There's even a part where Bond mentions leaving things out, and then the doctor does something, like it's out of screen, and Bond's like, ow, and the doctor's like, yeah, I left stuff out too.
Yes.
So like
good back and forth.
Yeah, it was really solid. I didn't catch the villain, the doctor being a villain vibe, but now that you mention it, that is an interesting way to perceive it.
Yeah.
But I do enjoy so many, especially towards the end when he kills the assassin, how he's talking about something else, but different things are, you know, happening in Paige.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, you know, I want to say it sounded very peaceful the way that he described how things went down. Mm-hmm. But like he just brutally murders this guy and then you find out that he's and I did just realize I was thinking the blonde chick at the party was the same chick that he dragged into that room.
Yeah.
One of the things that this as a whole of the anthology does is the final page is always pretty epic.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That I want it to hurt at the very end of the first issue, I would own that as like a piece of wall art.
Definitely. And a lot of these work. The covers for all of these issues are amazing.
Yeah.
A lot of times if you're looking at like the digital copies, like a lot of times or the graphic novel versions, they'll have a lot of the art at the back, like the covers, the alternate covers and stuff. And all of those are really good for all these series. So I think my favorite part of this first issue was there's a moment, I think it's at the very beginning, actually. The doctor asks what happened and Bond replies, "I fell down some stairs." And he's just, there's that big panel of him just looking like he had the shit kicked out of him. It's awful.
And well, the doctor says something about, I assume you fell down stairs into 20 other people.
Yes. Yeah, it's good stuff. It's moving on to issue two. This one was The Brain. And I think it got really dark right here for me.
Mm-hmm. This was the one I mentioned earlier where you find out that this person who is very clearly working for an outside government is in fact not.
Mm-hmm.
Her justification for her actions is that she serves the people because she is a biological engineer.
Yes. I don't really know if I have a whole lot to say about this one. Just like it was weird because you almost sympathize with her a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes you feel a little bit uncomfortable, you know, like, and it's like, you know, there's definitely some torture going on here. And, you know, like it really navigates that gray area, you know, of defending the world against terrorists, I guess. It raises some questions in an interesting way, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Like, yeah.
About methods and, you know, what, you know, is it worth it, you know, compromising your principles and whatnot.
Well, then what is the right thing to do? Because it's not everything is clear cut black and white.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Totally. And I mean, she does have one of the things that I do like is it's not entirely left up to the reader to decide whether it's right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
She does give a very specific example and explanation behind her actions.
Yeah. And then at the end, like those last few lines, I was like, oh my God. Like, I guess she was just buying time.
Yeah, she was buying time so that everyone is in kind of a weird position, so that nobody has the time to react.
Talking about the woman with the torture.
The torture.
That was pretty intense, I guess is the right word. I mean,
it was.
Never really seen. Yeah. I was surprised at the start that Bond is the is the interrogator, because that's something I've never seen before.
I don't think it's ever been done, not like this.
And like you said, like she's pushing him and biding time, like knowing that the waterboarding is coming, and just
she knows something is coming, which the two ends of this, which I do like, is like Bond does his own best. He is both the good cop and the bad cop.
Without a doubt.
Does everything he can because it is his job to get the information, but he doesn't want to not be a gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
So he does everything he can just to try to get down to the bottom of things. But then job kicks in. That is one of the things, I don't think it really came up in Kill Chain, but it even comes up in Live and Let Die, how they specifically state in like one speech bubble that Bond is able to compartmentalize all of these things. So the gentleman exists outside of the agent, and it's literally just, he shuts one door and opens another, and it's like, well, you didn't tell me what I wanted to know the easy way. This is my job. Yeah. I am a spy.
Yeah. I get what they were going for, but like, it kind of made me not like him. You know, like, I was like, oh geez. I don't know. It's weird.
I guess we've never seen him be the torturer.
Never to that level. He does pull a Batman every now and then where he like holds a guy off a roof. That kind of thing, but it's not like literally torturing someone.
Well, and it's normally, like you mentioned the Batman thing, I think of the movie we just watched, The Spy Who Loved Me, where the guy's holding on to his necktie at the edge of a building.
I have so much to say about that scene, but I'm going to save it for that episode.
But that guy was bad.
Yeah.
And then the people that he kills in Kill Chain were, maybe they were not necessarily horrific people, but they were certainly working for the wrong side. So it was best for Queen and Country that they die. And this woman, you know, she doesn't seem like a total asshole.
Well, and she's also making a lot of very good points.
Yeah.
Like, from an existential point of view, like, Great Britain's done some horrible things throughout history, you know? The U.S. has as well, and so it's kind of like, are we the good guys, you know?
It ends basically in silence. Once again, like, final panel is phenomenal. Yeah. But she says the line, life would be tragic if it weren't funny. But at this point, Bond has not spoken
for a couple pages now, right?
Yeah, it's like the four pages back, and he says just the line, tell me. And then she goes through this whole exposition. So essentially, it ends in silence, like Bond just standing there.
I do like the consistent way they draw Bond's face straight on once, and then they use that same face like almost exclusively just to show that like he has no emotion. You know, he's just doing his job.
That's a good point. You don't see him emote a whole lot.
Yeah, because her, you mentioned that, and I'm looking through it now. I love these tiny panels. This is like almost Watchmen level.
Oh yeah, it's got the nine panels.
Yeah,
oh yeah.
But they do a lot.
You can tell we're all comic fans.
Yeah.
Sorry. Sorry. What were you saying?
But in like you can go from panel to panel, and something is different. You know, the lips might be different, the eyes might be different. You know, they do put a lot of focus on her eyes. But yeah, Travis, like you said, just all of these panels where Bond is just kind of deadpanned.
Well, let's go ahead and move on to issue 3. This one's called The Gut. And so, Travis, you weren't a fan of this one? Is that what I gathered?
Not necessarily. I think it was such a shift in tone, especially with that previous issue. And, you know, first page, you get this Nazi dude with tattoos and just weird...
Like over-the-top Nazi tattoos.
So there's that. I'm like trying to... But Bond is like in a steam room with all these guys. it was just surprising. And that is when I was like, how does this connect to the previous two issues? You know?
Totally.
It was jarring, you know? Bit of a surprise. Yeah. But I love the way this issue ends, you know, with... this is Punisher Bond.
Definitely.
So, but trying to reconcile this is the same guy that was interrogating that woman just kind of doesn't work for me.
It does feel weird, right? I don't know. I forgot to look, but are there different writers on?
I think
each
it's
of these
the
issues?
Same.
I know there's different
writer,
artists.
But different artists every time. I think, like, I think that the writer is Alice Cott or. L.A. maybe? I'm not sure how to pronounce.
Yeah.
Because, on the digital, it doesn't actually say the artist name at the cover. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, what were your thoughts, Corey?
So this one is one of the ones that I perused through.
Okay.
And it is anthologies always have that effect as far as being like jarring and changing the art style. It is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of don't entirely know what they're trying to say about the neo-Nazis. If there's not to say that there's like a homosexual inclination, but there are parts where it's like, you know, they're slapping each other's butts. Clearly there's just a bunch of dudes hanging out in a bathhouse. But you know, if it's supposed to be sort of a statement of like, look at yourselves now, like you're filthy slobs, you stand for nothing, that, you know, what you allegedly represent stood for. But there are a lot of very good individualistic art scenes, like especially when they do the close-up. The very first face you see is the ugly guy, and then like several pages down they have the blue and red image that's a little bit higher detail with his eyes and his teeth, and you know, that change, and then the, what is it, a few pages down when Bond is drinking from the bottle, he's black, shrouded in black, and his eyes are the only thing that's visible, and then he goes to work on the Nazis.
So once it gets there, it was super enjoyable when it's just him, you know, going to town on these guys. And not to say that it wasn't for sure enjoyable before that, but just
like tonally,
it was just strange. I don't know why Bond is toying with these guys, you know.
It kind of worked for me. Like, I kind of liked it.
Sure.
It's like Bond is the real guy, and these guys think they're Nazis, but literally their own settings are like, no, they're just a bunch of pansies that are putting on this facade of being actual Nazis.
Yeah.
But dangerous nonetheless. And I was really glad they dispatched them. Because we need less of that in the world. I will say there's nothing more satisfying than Bond fighting Nazis.
I didn't know I needed that, but
like, it's weird though, right? Because it surprised me it doesn't happen more. I can't really think of a specific movie that really has that in it, Ian Fleming fought literal Nazis in World War II, so you'd think that'd be more of an element.
I feel like there's one story that might be Goldfinger. They're taking a bunch of Nazi gold, and Goldfinger might be converting it, you know. That aside from that, they barely, if ever, refer to that.
Yeah, because even in Goldfinger, it's literally just a reference, and his thing will most likely be to just smelt it down anyways. You know, it just happens to be a piece of Nazi gold because it's, I want to say they said it was very valuable because it's so rare or inaccessible, I guess.
Makes sense.
But yeah, the end of the Nazi one. One of my biggest gripes with Pierce Brosnan is the willingness to ditch the Walter PPK, you know, and go for the AK-47 kind of thing. So when Bond goes guns akimbo, it's like, it's cool, it's funny, but the Travis, like you said, this is the Punisher. This is less Bond and more Frank Castle.
Yeah,
I totally agree. It maybe felt a little out of place, but I guess I sort of enjoyed it. Regardless.
It's dumb fun.
Oh, yeah, like, that's what it is. It's dumb fun, and I feel like maybe that was needed after that last issue.
I think the jarring part for me was that it's not like he waited until there was a crucial bit of information that he's been waiting for this whole time. Like,
yeah, that's a good point.
He just decides to start killing these guys, you know, once he's had enough, I guess. So yeah, I think that's what ultimately just feels a little strange. But
that's valid. I think you got a good point there.
But like I said, satisfying.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
So the next one was The Heart. And this one's Bond saved by a woman who stitches him back up.
Yeah.
This, any thoughts? Sorry.
This one was the first that I think that really called back to the previous issue, you know, because it, a couple panels in, and there's a frame of, you know, M wasn't happy about how I handled the neo-Nazis, and there's a you know, an image of these dead Nazis in the spa. Mm-hmm. So that's when it was like, oh, okay, so these are kind of connected stories. It's one after the other. But, you know, at this point, it's still like we're 4 out of 6 issues in, and couldn't tell until now that this was, you know, it might be part of a long-running story, you know. So this is kind of where it started to feel really strange. And
like, I agree.
I did like this issue, but it still doesn't feel like part of the whole.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought the Bond girl, I guess, I don't know what to call it, Bond woman. Mm-hmm. I can't remember her name, but I thought she was very well written. I thought that
Moira.
Was... Moira, yes. I thought there was a lot of good chemistry there, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that was a really cool way to, you know, handle that storyline.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see a lot of...
If I'm just always looking for a twist, but again, I expected her to be the assassin, you know? I thought that'd be a cool change to make her this killer that's after him.
He dropped his defenses around
him.
Yeah.
And the assassin had a mask on when he's shooting at him from the car, so it's That's like, true. Why couldn't this be the same?
Did you get to this one, Corey?
I did not. I've just been perusing through it while you guys were talking about it. It does look like something that I would really enjoy. Even from the first few panels, you can sort of tell it's the cowboy, like the classic story of the cowboy who's, you know, got to take a break.
Mm.
Yeah,
like he just had a major battle and now has to relax and find someone out on the prairie. Like that is literally the story.
Yeah,
that's a good point. That's a good read of it.
It's defending the homestead sort of thing. And he's going through the house and making traps and bombs and whatnot. And that feels like Skyfall, kind of the third act of Skyfall, which is a great, you know, great bit. So that
Skyfall is probably my favorite Bond movie.
Really?
Yeah, it's a toss up. I mean, yeah, it depends on the mood I'm in, I guess.
Nice.
I love Skyfall, though. I think it's great. Cinematography and all that. So
I will say as like an overview, because Travis, you did mention this is actually connected to the previous one. All of this is fairly current day, you know, maybe not 2020.
Yeah.
But we have kind of a backing for where things lie technologically. He's dealing with neo-Nazis instead of actual Nazis.
Yep.
You know, the weapons look like they are fairly new-ish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah, kind of an interesting timeline because...
But he's still driving a Aston Martin DB5, which is a nice touch, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. But there's also not a lot of... actually, in any of these, there's not really a ton of technology.
Yeah,
this is the Skyfall Bond, the raw Bond.
Yeah,
That has to rely on whatever happens to be around him.
Yeah,
yeah, because even Moira is using a typewriter in her little cabin instead of like a laptop or.
yeah.
So it's kind of, you know, maybe this is like 80s or 90s or something. Maybe
it's a little ambiguous. I kind of like that.
Yeah.
Though.
Yeah, I mean, it does make this story timeless.
Definitely. So I guess we got 2 issues left. The next one is The Lungs. I thought the art style in this one was great. It was really colorful, really pops, you know, kind of jumps out of the page at you. And the whole issue is kind of a chase scene. Like he's after this guy with the bioweapon or the bomb or whatever. And one of the neat things that they did with this was there's sort of an internal monologue going on, but it's broken up between panels at points where it gives a sense of pacing like Bond's out of breath, which I thought was kind of cool.
I struggled with this one.
Yeah.
Because like stylistically, I kind of like it. It's dirty, you know, it's very gritty and it reminded me a lot of Dark Knight Returns. A lot of Frank Miller and Klaus Janson's artwork kind of fit with... And to go further, the first line... Well, not the first line. One of the first things that Bond says, this would be a bad death. And the opening line of Dark Knight Returns is Bruce Wayne saying, this would be a stupid death. It's him in his retirement racing a car that's about to, you know, explode in a fiery crash. Mm-hmm. But he's saying, you know, this would be a stupid death. He says that throughout the book a few times, and
yeah,
Bond
and it comes
says
full circle by the
yeah,
end.
Yeah. So Bond kind of says that similar, you know, similar thing here, mm-hmm. and you know, the dialogue is so broken up. It's like one word per panel, and at certain points, it's just run on sentences, you know, and it's yeah. very. It's very Rorschach in that way from Watchmen. It's like
true.
It didn't feel like this. I didn't feel like I'm
stream of consciousness.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't feel like I'm supposed to be reading James Bond. You know, it felt like I'm reading a mix of Dark Knight Returns and Watchmen. You know, it didn't.
Fair enough.
As much as I liked the art and the chase in this story, I didn't like the dialogue or the way that Bond is being presented that way.
Yeah, that's understandable. I feel like it kind of felt like a film noir, you know?
Yeah.
And it could be, you know, maybe I'm biased because I love that style. But I like the ambiguous ending there where he jumps in the water to neutralize the bomb and he says to himself, or he thinks to himself, this could be a good death. And then it just ends. And I was like, oh man, that's where the series should have ended.
Yeah.
But yeah. Have you had a chance to flip through this one at all, Corey?
Yeah. Again, like just while you were talking about it, I really love this art style. So downside to Live and Let Die at the end when the animation starts going to crap, there are a couple of panels where someone's not even in the background. They're just like a little bit further away and they use dots for eyes. And one of the dots is clearly off to the wrong side.
Oh man.
And it's like, that's so annoying that people do that because it's an anime as well. It's, you know, not limited. It's just comic books. But in this one, I feel like, you know, everything is done with intent.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, it looks like literally everyone's eyes are closed when they're at a distance. But that also means that there is a cleanliness to the style. The proportions are really warped, which is something that I like. It looks like there's a lot of existentialism in the dialogue, mm-hmm. but this reminds me a lot of Sean Murphy mm-hmm. in White Knight.
Yeah.
Batman series.
That was good.
Where it's scratchy. It feels dark. But even just like looking at this scene right before Bond gets tased,
mm-hmm.
You know, the officer's face is so tiny, but there's still enough data there, like that he has white in his eyes and eyeballs. Like, this guy looks terrified right now. But no, I'm pretty excited about checking this out because it reads like a movie.
Yeah.
It looks like
one thing I will say about this issue specifically that worked really well, reading it digitally worked really well when you have the panel to panel kind of mode where you just swipe and so you don't know what's coming. That was really nice with this issue.
Yeah, totally.
I've ruined a lot of comic books by not having that ability.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I know you survived because I can see it on the next page.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
No, 100%. All right, so let's get into that last chapter. I know, Corey, you haven't had a chance to really read it, but what did you think, Travis? How do you feel about this last one? The burial.
Right, this was, it's kind of a nice, like, two guys in a bar talking, you know, it's just a lot of dialogue.
A lot of dialogue.
Yeah. And this one, again, kind of made me think of Watchmen because mm-hmm. I could tell instantly, you know, Bond walking into a bar, that you're going to have to pay attention to the stuff in the background, you know? So it's like, you said, like sometimes not a lot happens, you know, with mm-hmm. the art, but you have to pay attention to what's going on in the background. So you have a couple tables with various people and one person gets up from the table and walks away and you have to think back like, okay, you know, when did they leave? You know,
it's sort of a mystery.
I like that about this one.
Yeah, you have to kind of pay attention to what's going on in the scene.
Yeah. Because Felix and Bond aren't doing a whole lot. You know, obviously the dialogue is there, but you're not, it doesn't matter what they're drinking, how many drinks they're drinking, you know, the looks
lot,
that they're giving
the
each other. Yeah, it's all background.
Yeah. So yeah, basically the whole issue is Bond and Felix hanging out at a pub, exchanging intel.
Mm-hmm.
I like how Felix says at one point, what we do, it can be a lonely business. I feel like that sort of encapsulates this whole series, I guess. Like, that's sort of one of the themes throughout, is that, like, he feels disconnected from everyone else, you know? Like, in that last issue, when he says, you know, that whole monologue about this could be a good death, he's like, he feels relieved, like, you know, he's, like, apart from everyone else, and it's depressing. It's kind of sad, but it, like, makes you sympathize with him a little bit, because he can't connect to other people, and I think Felix is the closest he comes to connecting with another person.
Yeah.
A comment on the perusal.
Yeah.
And this is another one I think I'll kind of enjoy reading. If there's a plus side to this anthology where the, like, Kill Chain is just kind of a fun side story, you know, it takes up 6 issues.
Totally.
There's a lot of Bond that maybe we don't want to see in movies.
Like an existential crisis.
Well, like, each one of the Roger Moore movies is 2 hours long, and it's like, you could make them an hour and it would be a better movie.
Yeah,
I 100% agree.
And one of my comments on one of the films was that the director felt like you needed to see literally everything that was going on in everyone's life at that moment. And in film, that doesn't work. And sometimes even in a 6-issue comic series, I would not want to read 6 issues of this, like the Burial, but I feel like as an anthology, it works as a singular, because you get that little bit more of Bond. But there are 2 pages right towards the end, where, you know, the barman is asking him, you know, what kind of business are you two in? You know, Bond says, a bloody tiring one, and the barman responds, all of man's work is a bloody business. And
I love the lines then, after that.
But it visually, because again, I've just only looked at this one. I like the art, and I do like that Travis pointed out there is a lot going on in the background. But two, at the end, the barman goes and sits down with his buddy. So the bar is now empty, and it's this kind of this view into the future. This is what Bond and Felix have to look forward to.
These guys, you can tell, have a past that could be like Bond's. You know, they could have been, you know,
romance,
soldiers, assassins.
I mean, not even that. It's just that they're old friends. They have lived a life, and when the work is because Felix and Bond are talking after their job is over. So now that it's late into the night, the barman's job is over because no one else is there. So it's this mirrored representation, you know, the future mirroring back, that like when his job is over, he still has his one friend to talk to.
Man, that's a good point.
Yeah.
That's deep.
So, just I think that's kind of a plus side to these latter comics, is they offer more visually than, you know, the very first one was not very visually. There's stuff happening, but it's the dialogue that sells it.
Right.
The second one is a good combo. The third part is, even just flipping through it, it's kind of not really attractive. You know that you have to read more of what's going on because the visuals are just sort of confusing. But like the last two, I think say a lot. If there were no dialogue, I feel like in many of these instances, you could pull something out of it.
Definitely. There's one line I want to point out in this one. The pub owner or the barkeep or whatever, he says, the toilet's haunted probably. Arse ghosts. You boys want another pint? It's so weird and random, and I just kind of love it.
Yeah, as they're like carting off the corpse, you know.
Yeah.
Most people would be like, I'm shutting down for the rest of the night, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
No, they just go back inside. Yeah. And this is, I didn't notice it really until now. This is where his buddy comes in. Like, he's coming in out of the rain. I don't know if he was in the bar beforehand, but, you know, he's there in that panel next to them loading up.
And he's one of the only people in color too.
Yeah.
So how would you guys rank these?
If you view them as collections, I actually, even though I haven't read all of it, I still think I'm going to enjoy The Body more.
Okay.
And then probably Live and Let Die, and then Kill Chain, only because Kill Chain has that very abrupt ending. One or two issues more, I feel like Kill Chain would easily trump Live and Let Die, but...
I think after having read The Body and Kill Chain, like, I kind of struggled for a little while getting through Live and Let Die, because it's so long.
It's a full book.
Well, yeah. I kind of wonder, like, because there's a lot of sections of Live and Let Die that it's like, you know, that just take a while, you know? It's there's a lot of like, well, we'll stop here for the night and we'll have a meal and, you know, and then like nothing happens the next day. And like then we finally get to the Bond and Quarrel, you know, the training montage kind of thing to get him prepared to make the swim across the island. And then it's like, okay, but we'll set out tomorrow. It's like, God damn it. Like, just get to it. Come on. You know? So it's things like that, like looking back, like that was just a long comic book, you know?
Yeah, it really was.
So I would like to, you know, I wish that would have been maybe a little bit shorter. I'd probably rank Kill Chain as the top, and then Live and Let Die, and then The Body. I liked all three of them. I liked, but I liked less of The Body than everything else.
I was surprised how much I liked Live and Let Die, the comic version.
Yeah, yeah.
As you know, like I wasn't able to finish the actual book. But it was a really enjoyable read. And I think I would actually put Kill Chain slightly above it because of those pacing issues.
Yeah.
So Kill Chain, Live and Let Die, and then The Body. I guess that's how you ranked it too, huh?
Yeah. So yeah.
But yeah, Live and Let Die is a solid second for all of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean it's good. But I don't know. I'd like to see someone try to adapt that story into a modern setting and see if that works.
But I kind of liked
it. You'd have to kind of flip a few things, I think.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I kind of like the idea of like the modern Bond comics being set present day, and then the adaptations being set, you know, as they were written.
Kinda yeah. Like that. Oh, definitely. Yeah. I really do hope Dynamite continues and does the next book, because like I said, the next book's really good. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I feel like that's kind of somewhat uncharted territory to do a comic format of a book. I know that there are things out there, but I feel like this is one of the longest ones I've heard of. Like I said, it's digitally, it's 187 pages, and you're only maybe 30 of those are info, like info dumps and behind the scenes stuff. So it's lengthy.
Definitely.
It's got a lot in there, and I enjoyed it. But yeah, there definitely were some pacing issues, and I feel like a couple of things could have been cut shorter. Or maybe it was an art thing. Maybe they could have, if the art were better, I would have appreciated it more.
Yeah. So I would say all these are definitely worth reading. The Live and Let Die adaptation, I feel like if you do want to try to read all the books, I would recommend maybe skipping the actual book and doing the adaptation instead for this one. So I guess we probably need to wrap up. We've been going for a while on this. Where can people find you, Corey?
Right now, still just photography. If you search the letters KTORJ, you'll find my Instagram, Facebook page, everything, KTORJUS in photography. And nice. Hopefully soon I'll have a podcast up and running. And before we get off, I would heavily recommend to both you and Travis, read the Felix Leiter comic.
Oh yeah, it's pretty good. Definitely worth checking out as well.
Yeah,
cool. Yeah,
one stood out a lot.
I found all of these on Hoopla, the digital library app. I mean,
that's right.
So that's how I read everything that we talked about today. And I've got there's a James Bond complete Warren Ellis omnibus that's available. I know that one starts with Varger. And but they had a lot of James Bond comics. So I'm pretty sure the Felix Leiter one was also there as well. So I think I'm going to keep this going and keep reading some James Bond comics now that I've been kind of opened up to it and really enjoyed what I've read. So.
Yeah, I feel like most of them are pretty good, but there are some that are not. There are some that are silly.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's just so generic, but that's a whole another episode.
60s Bond film in comic form.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So where can people find you, Travis?
I can be found over on my first podcast is Real Comic Heroes, where we go chronologically through a big list of comic book movies. We started with Superman and the Mole Men from 1951.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and then we jumped into a bunch of Bond movies because those were just next on our list. Dr. No and From Rush with Love and all those. Sweet. So we've covered all the Bond movies up to our last one was Living Daylights. So,
oh, nice! You're in the 80s now.
Yeah. We're right as of this recording. We're like 1992, so we haven't gotten up to GoldenEye yet. But we've talked about a lot of comic book movies.
So that means, are you about to cover Batman Returns, or have you already?
We've just covered it.
Okay, because I got to catch up, but
Okay,
that's awesome.
Yeah. So. Yeah, we just go, like I said, through a big list of movies and review them, And then my other podcast is Watchmen Minute, where we, me and a different co-host, we went through the director's cut of Zack Snyder's Watchmen 1 minute at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's 186 episodes you can check out and listen to us break down that whole movie and analyze things. And it's a part of the Movies by Minutes kind of genre of podcasts, and you can go to moviesbyminutes.com and find, if you have a favorite movie, it's probably been talked about 1 minute at a time.
Corey and I were actually talking about that earlier.
Okay. It started with Star Wars. Star Wars Minute, started the whole thing, and it's the gold standard. It's definitely worth your time if you're a Star Wars fan, so...
Yeah, it's definitely a deep dive, but I think it's worth it. Those podcasts are a lot of fun. Obviously a huge dedication, and I think you did a great job with the Watchmen one.
I like it.
I still got a long way to go because you did the director's cut, and that's a lot of minutes, but I really...
Yeah, and we did talk about the all the episodes of the HBO series as well.
Yeah,
so that was
which was fantastic.
It was good.
Yeah. So. Well, I'm Eric Slater. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. That's E-R-I-K-S-L-A-D as in dog, E-R. And I'm on Epic Fails of History. I'm on Too Young for This Trek. And I'm on this season of Podcasters Assemble. So I'm staying pretty busy in the podcast scene in the moment.
Yeah, you are.
Yep. But yeah, thank you so much for joining me. I thought this was a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
Same. Thanks for having
me. Yeah,
definitely. We'll have to... hook up again for another episode at some point.
Yeah, please do.
Sure.
For sure. Well, have a great one, guys. Take care.
All right, thanks.
Yep, bye.
Later.
Podcasters Assemble Season 003 is a production of the We Can Make This Work, Probably, Podcast Network. Find more of our shows at probablywork.com and learn how to contribute to future episodes of Podcasters Assemble by looking us up on Twitter at Casters Assemble or joining our Discord server, link in the show notes. Submissions are always open. Thank you to everyone who was able to contribute to this episode. Be sure to check the show notes for links where you can find them all online. Thank you.
This has been a presentation
of the We Can Make This Work
Probably Network.
Follow us on Twitter
at Probably Work for more of our questionable content.
Also, we have a website called probablywork.com.
Yeah.
Especially the newer ones. Sorry.
That's okay.
Let me deal with him real quick.
Of course, no rush.
Okay. I'm back. I just closed some doors, so hopefully he doesn't destroy the house while I'm recording.
Okay, no worries.
And restarted my recording.